I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a pig.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Support for In the Garden is provided in part by The Flower Farm. Thanking our customers for your support this season, we look forward to seeing you in the spring. We are available to set up tree and shrub orders for next spring. Flower Farm's open 10 to 5 every day, except Wednesday, at 6 Rory Road, Papke's Landing.
Put them on the side, put them in the middle, put a homegrown tomato on a hot can griddle.
Homegrown tomatoes, what'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
All right, have I got you here on the line, Ed?
I'm still here, aren't
you? All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this episode is our end-of-season show with Master Gardener Ed Bajarski, and I'm here on behalf of the listeners. I'm Oren. And good to have you on the phone, Ed, talking to us from Juneau, and probably one of the big themes of the day is putting the garden to bed, huh?
It is. We've had some great, outstanding weather, record-breaking weather here. Dry, the whole first part of the month. So it's really been great being able to be out working, digging in the garden. So I've been, at my place at least, I've got finished planting the last of my garlic after I got the last of my potatoes out of the ground. Carrots are yet, I'm leaving carrots in the ground. I'm hoping I can leave, we're gradually eating them. But the ground isn't freezing much yet, and I know the weather is supposed to change. So, we can talk about how to keep our potatoes for the winter and carrots, possibly cabbages too. And then also, with the frosts we've had, I'm assuming you've had frosts down there in Petersburg?
Oh, yeah. Some frosty mornings, definitely.
So the things like dahlias and begonias should be starting to turn brown and wilt, along with the potatoes finally did, with the last, we got down to 27 degrees in my house. So all of those need to be taken care of, assuming we want to save those begonias and dahlias and fuchsias also for the winter and to regrow them next spring.
Right. Yeah, I know there's a lot of folks who have begonia baskets around town and fuchsias. So what should they be doing now that frost has come and that, like you say, starting to turn those brown? Did they want to keep those out until the frost? Is that sort of something that shuts the plant down for the season, or what do they do next?
Well, yes. And, sometimes they go a really long time. My wife and I moved our begonias, potted plants, next to the house. They're underneath the deck. Still get plenty of sunshine, so they haven't actually been hit hard by the frost. So they're still blooming, but we're also heading south for a week next week. So we will snap off all of the tops, all the stems off the begonias. They will go into our garage and in the pots and all initially to just kind of slowly dry out. And then later this fall, when I get back and have more time, I'll actually lift out of the pots, pull out the big tubers, and some of these are 5-6 year old or more tubers, so some of them will weigh half a pound apiece, and save those. I label them with a color, and they'll go into paper bags for the winter until maybe next March or so, when I'll bring them out, and we can mention that, next March we get the program started again. Mm-hmm. Put them in some damp potting soil, warm them up, start them all over again.
Okay. So
dahlias we do a little different. Mm-hmm. But, go ahead.
So with begonias, you cool them down, you dry them off, you pull the tubers out of the soil, and you said paper bags is a good way to store those, and you want to keep those like in the garage
right.
or someplace cool?
Yeah, don't put them in plastic bags, in other words. I mean, you can actually leave them in the pots, too, if folks have enough room to store them, pots and all.
Okay.
And then in springtime, what you'd want to do still is scratch in some new fertilizer into those pots.
Okay.
If you're going to leave them in there.
Mm-hmm.
And the critical thing with all of these really is finding a cool space, dark also. You don't want them to come back alive to start growing again until we're ready for that.
Mm-hmm.
But a place that isn't going to freeze. Maybe, you know, as long as if you know that your crawl space doesn't freeze, that's fine. You know, if it gets down to, 40 degrees, that's okay. But on the other hand, we also don't want them to be in too warm a place. So, if you've got a garage that has your furnace in it, that may very well be too warm. That may be up in the 60s or so,
mm-hmm.
and actually be too warm for storage of those. So cooler, to a point, is good. Or if you have an old refrigerator that doesn't get that cold, you could keep them in there. Dahlias are pretty much the same kind of thing, however. There, if your dahlias were in pots, might even be in the ground. You want to dig them up out of the ground or pots, wash off the soil from all the tubers that you have, and they look very very much like sweet potato tubers.
Mm-hmm.
And you wash those off, and you cut the tops back to about 2 inches long. And the key thing there is that the base of this year's stems have new buds, right above the tubers, that will sprout next spring.
Oh.
So what often happens, unfortunately, when you're digging these up, no matter how careful you are, some of the tubers break off.
Hmm.
And unless they have part of that stem, it is quite unlikely that they will sprout next year. And you can actually go, you might Google this online, eating dahlia tubers. And because they are somewhat edible, I have yet to try that. But there is an option for those broken ones that you can't do anything else with. So do a little research. And supposedly, and I've read about these things, they say that some, they taste different. Different varieties. Some, I suppose, taste better than others.
Huh.
Give them a try and report back.
Yeah. I'm imagining, that's your punishment. If you're careless when you're taking care of your dahlia tubers, your punishment is you have to have it for dinner, even if it's a little bitter.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So do the research and see and let me know. I'm going to try it. I don't have a whole lot of them, but I know one guy who's got lots. This fellow in town, he covers his whole front yard with 15-gallon pots that he grows dahlias in, and he probably has, 100 of them or more.
Mm-hmm.
I dare say he's going to have more than a few that break off. So let me talk to him about getting a sample, and maybe we'll make some dahlia stew or something. I don't know, or mashed and fried dahlias, or instead of potato pancakes, maybe there's dahlia pancakes. I don't know. Anyway, if somebody tries these, let me know.
Yeah. Sounds good.
This is also, at the same time as you're digging those dahlias, that's a good time after you've washed off these, and sometimes if you've had them a while, you get some big clumps, maybe 5 to 10 pounds after they're washed, huge clumps. But you normally don't want to plant that whole clump as is next spring. You do want to split them carefully. Again, making sure you have some of that stem on top with, maybe 2 or 3 tubers still attached.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, and if you label, if you know what colors, which ones were that you just dug and washed, then you can, you can give them away, you can sell them. Certainly, I know the flower farm grows lots and lots and lots of dahlias.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff, too. So, that's an opportunity, too, I suppose, you can also pot them up extras to sell in the springtime.
Yeah, I suppose so. And if people are locally growing dahlias and, they're not taking thorough enough notes right now, I'm sure Deb and Craig out there have a lot of good advice because they are absolute experts at growing dahlias. Yeah.
Yeah, Oh, absolutely. I mean, magnificent flowers. You know, they're great cut flowers. They make a great display, as long as you can keep the slugs away from them. That's the other issue, that slugs really, really like dahlias. So you really do need to use slug bait or, you know, have sand around them or some other, or seaweed, you know, fairly fresh seaweed around them to repel the slugs so they don't chew up the chew up all the leaves and flowers, unfortunately. So, and I don't know, I don't know if the deer like dahlias or not. I'm sure somebody may chime in on that one for us, too.
Right. Yeah. Does that seaweed keep slugs off because it's salty, or is it, what is it about the seaweed that...
It does for a while, yeah. Again, you know, in a normal summer, of course, it rains here. I mean, maybe you've noticed that. And so the salt leaches off away from the seaweed.
Yeah.
So, again, bringing in some new fresh seaweed, if you can get some in the summertime, to keep putting around some of your more slug-attractive plants can keep that issue down, even though, you know, there are the worms and all the other stuff. Seaweed is very beneficial for everything, and I'm certainly been hauling it with, you know, with some of the storms. We're supposed to have a storm this weekend, and that'll probably bring some more seaweed up on the beaches again.
Oh, yeah,
so,
definitely.
So, you know, hauling that home and mixing, it's better if you can mix it with the soil to break down over the wintertime. But again, at least put it on top of the soil, you know, on your garden bed, place where you're going to grow potatoes next year. I put it around my raspberries and strawberries and blackberries, currants, gooseberries. Put around cherry trees and apple trees, too. And you can also use the seaweed around your perennial plants after you've done the cleanup of those. Cut the stems down and throw that stuff into the compost bin, too.
Absolutely. And for those listening out there, Ginger Evans and her students in the close-up program over at the high school are collecting seaweed and selling bags of seaweed to gardeners in the community as a fundraiser that's going on right now. So, yeah, you can reach out to Ginger Evans over at the school or on Facebook or however. And that's a real easy way to get lots of seaweed for your garden. Yep.
Yeah, and again, the seaweed has all the trace minerals and nutrients that wash off the land back to go back down into the ocean. So we're bringing this stuff back up to the land to enrich our garden beds, to make our fruit trees grow better, and berry bushes and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's cool.
And that way, the other good thing, of course, is some of these young people are learning the value of and how much work it is to garden, I suppose, if they're hauling buckets or bags of seaweed.
Oh, yeah.
And all that, too. So, yeah, that's a good thing all the way around, for good for the garden, good for the students, and, you know, it's an organic nutrient source.
Absolutely.
For gardens.
Okay, yeah, definitely. And those are, like you say, great for really every bed you've got going, your trees, your potato piles, everything, whatever you're going to do next year. And, yeah, you know, I never really even thought about it as slug deterrent, but that's a win-win-win, isn't it? You know, but, yeah, of course, the rain issue.
Well, it is, yes. And you'll see, you know, very often if you lift up, say, if you've got a pile of seaweed out there in a garden somewhere and you lift it up, you'll see the worms underneath it. You know, earthworms don't seem to be bothered as much as the slugs are. They're less sensitive to the salts or whatever. I suppose it takes a little while. I suppose a certain amount of it probably has to leach away. But still, it can definitely work, help the garden in so many different ways. So get out and do some of that this fall. The other thing, you know, I mentioned about digging potatoes, carrots, and I suppose other crops too. If folks have rutabagas, turnips, some may have some beets, and parsnips. Now, parsnips can stay in the ground pretty much all winter long, but most everything else does need to be dug at some point. You know, all these do have sugars in them, which means they won't freeze immediately, shouldn't have frozen yet in the garden. But at the same time, most of the rest of these don't benefit. I mean, if the top 2 inches of ground soil freezes, and I've dug this up, you know, pick up a layer of frozen ground with carrots sticking down out of it. Unfortunately, when the tops of the carrots freeze and if they start to crack, then they won't keep. So then you're going to have to eat a lot of carrots fast. Or they can be pressure canned if need be to store. But I would much rather have fresh carrots in the wintertime. I'm just talking to a fellow here, and I've got a spare garage refrigerator where I'll dig and wash the carrots and slightly dry them first before putting them into like 1 gallon Ziploc bags, and then into the fridge from there. If you've got a good root cellar that stays nice and cool, or again, we talked about a crawl space that's cooler, ideally this is cool enough to be just bare, get down to just above freezing,
right,
if possible. Mm-hmm. Again, you can store some of these root crops in them after you trim the tops off them. Mm-hmm. Store them in some just damp sand. Or you've got a local sawmill there that you can get some damp sawdust. And there, being picky about your sawdust makes a difference, too. I'd say don't use cedar sawdust, more because of the flavor it may pass on to the carrots or whatever is stored in them. Like carrots and beets do really well in this, but more like the spruce and hemlock sawdust will be less aromatic than cedar sawdust would be.
And how
you kind of layer them in the sawdust.
Okay.
In the container, now if you're going to use buckets or something like that, or tub, you know, the big bait tubs are great, those black bait tubs folks use for their long lining. But having some extra holes in the bottom for ventilation, they need some air circulation. So you put a layer of sawdust or sand in the bottom, slightly damp, lay out some nice carrots or your nice beets in there, you know, fill sand up on top or the sawdust up, and then another layer, and then do it again, you know, sand and produce, and sand and produce. So you got the surface. And, of course, you also got to think about how heavy these things are going to get when you move them. So that's why sawdust is not quite as heavy as damp sand, of course.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
And what happens eventually, you know, if you don't eat them fast enough, then what happens is they do start to sprout.
Right.
But you can eat the sprouts. You can eat the bean, the beet greens that may sprout from the tops of these. And you can even eat the lettuce, you know, carrot tops can be used. They can be tossed into stew and such. They've got, you know, they're kind of almost like parsley in some ways, but they're more delicate there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a possibility. And turnips and rutabaga is the same thing. And the key with all of these, anything we're storing, that they need to be the best produce. You know, we don't want to have damaged, we don't want to have cracked carrots, we don't want to have turnips and rutabagas that have root maggots in them.
Right.
You know, they don't get better in storage. You know, so you don't want to be packing these things away and then, you know, the little critters or something, or if they're cracked or damaged, then they may more easily succumb to various fungus diseases that we may have.
Mm-hmm.
This applies to if we're doing potatoes, we're storing potatoes. So there, you know, get them out of the ground gently. If you spear a potato, set it aside for eating tonight or, you know, making mashed potatoes, boiled potatoes, whatever. Set those aside. Any damaged ones, set those aside to eat first. If they've got a lot of scab on them, set those aside to eat first, because the scab, because there are all these breaks in the skin, the potatoes can dry out more quickly. So we want to be storing our best stuff. For potatoes, we don't for those normally, if they're clean, you know, once you, and I do wash my potatoes off before storing them. Dry them, cure them somewhat in a garage in a dark, cool place, and you know, whether you have to throw a blanket over them or some cardboard or whatever, don't let them be exposed to the light that start to turn green. And then once they've done that for maybe 3, 4, 5 days or a week, then from there again sort them out and put them into boxes, cardboard boxes, with maybe a hole or two for air circulation. And again, those can go into the root cellar or into your crawl space, where then you can just gradually use them as you need to.
So with those potatoes, is the light, kind of protecting them from the light, that's especially important during the curing phase or throughout the storage?
Throughout storage the whole time, and this applies even during the summertime, you know, when the potatoes are growing, that when and we fill up the potatoes, we add the extra sand or soil around the potato plants as they grow, because some varieties of potatoes tend to grow closer to the surface of the soil, and if they're exposed to the light, exposed to the sun, then that will start turning the potato skin green, and then you get which also then gives it a very bitter taste.
Right.
And we want to avoid doing that. So again, if you notice, you know, when you're digging your potatoes, you've got some of these potatoes that have the green side on the top side where they've got exposed to the light. You can peel that away, you know, cut it into it. You can see the green will penetrate a short distance. You can peel that off. It would be best. Don't eat them. Don't eat the green stuff. It isn't good for us. But you can still, if you're saving potatoes for seed for next year, those potatoes that have some green on them, you can still set those aside to save for that purpose.
Oh, okay.
And that, of course, you know, so again, if you're going to be saving seed potatoes for yourself, again, you want to choose your best, you know, like the best potatoes from, or the best plants, you know, maybe the most productive ones in your garden, and set those aside, or even set aside certain sizes of potatoes, like potatoes that are maybe around the size of a ping pong ball or a golf ball or something like that, or smaller, and set those aside to be used to be saved for your potato seed for starting next year. So those maybe, again, get some paper bags and put those, label them with variety, and put those small potatoes in there, then so you know you have some for next year's planting.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's all extremely great advice about, you know, storage, prepping, looking after all of these wonderful rooty things. One question we had is about greenhouses in the winter. So if you, I know there's a lot of folks in Petersburg grow in greenhouses, and I imagine this time of year, many of them are wondering what will be able to continue in their greenhouse through the winter. I know some folks are doing a lot of kale in their greenhouses. Is that something that people will be able to continue growing and harvesting throughout the winter? Or what do you recommend for your greenhouse in the winter?
It really depends on what kind of a greenhouse you have and what you're covering. Now, for me, I just have all three of my structures just have single layer plastic on them. So that means that it's 27, well, it hasn't gotten quite as cold inside. So where my tomatoes are, I've got a thermometer there, it's got down to 30 to 31 degrees in there. We picked the last, the cucumbers are out. But there's still tomatoes there because they have enough sugar in them, so I've got to pick them. I mean, I'm hoping today or tomorrow I'll get the last of the tomatoes out.
Right.
And those that aren't ripening yet, they will hopefully ripen gradually. Mm-hmm. And I just recently, just last week, planted spinach in that same greenhouse, which will probably sprout a little bit, but won't do much until early spring, like 1st of March when the leaves are getting longer.
Okay.
For those folks, some people may have the double layer greenhouse, whether they're inflated two layers of plastic, or they have some of the clear vinyl or other materials, fiberglass, whatever it happens to be, mm-hmm. that have an air layer. Those will normally keep air temperatures inside the greenhouse a bit warmer.
Mm-hmm.
And so you may be able to stretch the season for a while. And you mentioned kale, which is a perfect one. I mean, last winter, my kale overwintered fine outdoors unprotected. I didn't do anything with it. We were eating kale all winter long.
Mm-hmm.
In a greenhouse, certainly it will do fine. Also, you may actually have to water it some inside the greenhouse if it gets too dry.
Mm-hmm.
But again, what I find is that the smaller plants tend to overwinter better than the bigger plants do. And then, again, they'll take off and grow as soon as the days start getting longer in the spring. And that's really the limiting factor, is because our days are getting shorter, that if you've got the insulated greenhouses, you know, multiple layers, and can add some extra light to the greenhouse, then you may be able to really stretch your season more.
Mm-hmm.
So that depends on what you've got and what you're willing to do. And, you know, you may, you know, more or less heroic measures to keep those tomatoes going as long as possible, perhaps.
Right.
But or if you've got supplemental heat, also, maybe you've got a wood stove in the greenhouse or some electric heat, electric heaters or something that you can help. And maybe it's even, if you've got a big greenhouse, you can either even section off like one end of the greenhouse and build basically, a greenhouse inside of the greenhouse to keep a few plants going longer.
Right.
And put some jugs of water in there, which will help will moderate the temperatures. And then again, if you've got a little heater, then that way you're not heating the whole greenhouse. You're just heating a small area of it that you may want to stretch out your season that much longer.
Right. So even those folks who are growing greens that they're hoping to continue enjoying through the winter, they still are going to have to plan on kind of closing things down. They're not going to be able to really grow all winter. Instead, it'll be, essentially, like you're saying, stretching out the growing season longer.
Right. And, if you've got lots of plants, like lots of kale, and I've got about a 40-foot row of kale right now that's a foot tall, but it's at the edge of the driveway, so it may end up getting snow plowed on it. I guess we'll find out what happens there if we get snow.
Right.
And that's the other big if, is what kind of a winter we're going to have. I'm not going to predict it.
Totally.
We may be lucky and have another mild winter and be able to keep harvesting that stuff all winter long.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even my Swiss chard, we were able to harvest during much of the winter last year.
Right.
So we'll see what happens there. But again, limiting factors are normally lack of day light and day length for a lot of these plants, where if you get something like Territorial Seeds puts out their fall, winter, spring catalog with varieties in it that are recommended for the shorter day length hours for growing. And that's where I got some of the spinach that I'm growing.
Nice.
I mean, it bolts very quickly in the springtime.
Mm-hmm.
But again, for the wintertime, it'll hang on there and it'll last. And again, some of the other different kinds of greens, turnip greens or mustard greens and that sort of thing, a lot of them are more cold hardy and tolerant, at least, of the not just cooler weather, but the shorter day length hours. It's worth having a little bit of protection inside there if it gets really cold, whether that be just a couple of layers of the Remay horticultural fabric or even using fleece blankets. And again, a couple of the, like milk jugs full of water right around your plants. Again, that will help keep them alive a bit longer. And, whether we can get some fresh greens for Thanksgiving and Christmas time, all the better.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose if it's shaping up to be a cold, like a very cold winter, very weatherish, it might even be wise to kind of take down your greenhouse a bit just to sort of let that hard freeze do a little bit of maybe pest control in that growing environment, right? I think out at the flower farm, that's largely what they do. They've got lots of big greenhouses going, and I think they take maybe all of them down or most of them down in order to just kind of, let some pests get killed by the winter, some slugs, maybe some aphids, things like that get hopefully shut down if the weather is cold enough, right?
Right. And we don't know what's going to happen. And of course, the other big issue is if you've got a greenhouse, well, depending on what kind of a greenhouse, what kind of hoops and supports you have, is there someone going to be around who can push or shovel the snow off the greenhouse if we get much snow?
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to leave for a month or two and don't have good help to be able to do that, then taking the cover off is a safety measure so the whole thing doesn't collapse, which makes even more of a mess.
Mm-hmm.
For mine, the new hoop house that I just built it last year, but I didn't have the cover on it all winter. This year, I'm still debating whether I'm going to do that or build some extra supports in there to hold the hoops up, to hold the plastic up, etc. It's all connected.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the debate in my mind. Do I, as you say, keep those up? But still, my ends of these are open, so certainly the temperatures inside, it will still get cold.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, keeping it drier helps, and even just stirring up the soil, if you've got soil pests, And so stirring up the soil can help to expose things like the slug eggs, so they dry out is good. If you've got a good sturdy greenhouse, you're not worried about the snow collapsing, at least have all the vents open, maybe open the doors up, so we get a good cold spell. Then again, that can very definitely help in the pest control efforts.
Right.
Too. So again, you've got to look at your greenhouse and how sturdy is it? What has it undergone in the past? I know the two of my greenhouses, at least, that have steel frames, have had as much as 18 inches of heavy wet snow on top of them. I still try to get out there and push the snow off if I'm around, but they have held up that well. So,
wow.
So that's certainly something to think about versus just a Costco shelter that's covered with clear plastic.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those collapse during wintertime, and I scavenge pieces and parts from them in the spring, make more greenhouses.
Yeah, there you go. Well, so there's a lot to consider with greenhouses, but it's definitely time to be thinking about those, making some decisions, kind of paying attention as the season kind of comes on, what we're really in for. Who knows? You know, people were saying La Nina, going to be cold and snowy, but then the blob is back, so who knows?
Right, yeah, all those interesting weather factors that we have here, so... I mean, look at the season that we've just gone through and what did really well. If you haven't made some notes already, do so. Again, while you're harvesting, I've been making notes on, you know, what's come out, what has done well, all the potatoes that grew really well for me, and thinking ahead for next year, dreaming ahead for next year. What am I going to grow more of? What do I need to grow less of? And all that sort of thing too, but make some notes and start doing a little planning ahead, even as we're doing our garden cleanup work, and hopefully we learn from this interesting gardening season that we've just about finished up with, and who knows what next year's going to bring.
Right. Well, it's going to be fun in the garden next year, one way or another. You know, things are going to grow, lessons are going to be learned. You know. Food is going to be harvested and all that wonderful stuff that takes place in the garden and after the garden, you know. But, yeah, maybe that's a good note to wrap it up on. Lots of things to do this time of year in the garden as far as putting things to bed, tidying up, making plans, and, gosh. It's been a good season on the show here with you, Ed. I've learned a tremendous amount, and I'm looking forward to March already as far as getting things going again.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, yeah, I always started gardening back in January, this year, so because we had no snow and the ground was not frozen,
right.
We got away with it this year, and so we'll see what we get. How early will I be gardening, or how late will I still be gardening? I don't know. I mean, I don't usually stop gardening, although we're headed down to California, and we'll probably be doing some gardening down there at my son's new place in Napa.
Oh, cool.
So we'll see what his conditions are like down there, and maybe plant a fig tree or a persimmon tree or something like that for him.
Nice. Yeah, well, that'll be great, I'm sure. Cool. Well, Ed, thanks so much.
I'm looking forward to it, and yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I guess that's another thing about this winter. If it's as mild as it has been, maybe we'll start up the show a little earlier, as just, you know, the season is telling people, well, get to work, everybody, you know. But we'll check in.
That's right. When we get stuff started and when we can be working out in the garden and when to be just sitting up curled by the fire in the rocking chair with the seed catalogs.
Absolutely. Right on. Well, Ed, thanks so much. Enjoy this season coming on, and all the best. We'll talk to you sooner than we'd think. You know, it'll be here
okay. Before
long.
All right. Sounds good, Aaron. Well, till next year.
Okay. Till then. Bye-bye.
Yep. Bye.
Well, that's kind of a wrap on the season of In the Garden with Ed and Oren. Big thanks to the Flower Farm for their underwriting support of this show. And they say big thanks to the customers they have during the season. They're looking forward to seeing you all in the spring. And they're currently available for tree and shrub orders for the spring. 10 to 5 every day except Wednesday at 6 Rory Road, Papke's Landing. That's the Flower Farm.